to another episode of Three Wise DMs, the podcast for three dungeon masters. I've been doing this for way too long. Talk about all the things we do to try to make our games as good as they can be.
Hi, I'm Tony.
I'm Chris.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stares a stranger. With every move he makes, another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man. They've given you a number and taken away your down. Yes.
Very
welcome
nice.
Back, okay. Everyone, to another episode of Three Wise DMs. This is the Rock and Roll DM, DM Dave. Have a very special episode that I kind of teased in one of our recent social posts, our Minis Monday. So we are the kings of birthday games here at Three Wise DMs. As you guys all know, there was a good like 3-month period where that's every episode and article, I think, had to do with one of our birthday games. But DM Chris did not fail when he ran my birthday game utilizing, that's right, everyone, Top Secret New World Order by TSR Incorporated. Now, this is not the original, Top Secret or Top Secret SI. This is the reboot that they had written by Merle Rasmussen. But we're going to go over Top Secret. What we did in the game, what we loved, what we didn't, playing a completely new system, including the nostalgia of being a secret agent man.
Well, it had, I thought the learning curve on it was pretty smooth. This is a system I have no familiarity with whatsoever, and Chris broke it down pretty easy, and it's like, well, you've got stats, you have things you're good at, and you have other specializations, and between the three of those categories, you to each one of them determines a different die that you use, and you're trying to come up with a total number to see if anything you're attempting to do is going to be successful or not, which is great. And one of the, it kind of, in some respects, reminded me a little bit of Call of Cthulhu, not because Shoggoths are chasing us around, but because you are mortal men and women doing things. But instead of like Call of Cthulhu, where it's like, I'm kind of afraid to go explore the basement, now it's time to do crazy over-the-top stuff that you never dream of, and you absolutely can get yourself killed. So it was actually kind of exciting. It was a very nice change of pace.
So yeah, so just as a little bit of a primer, what happened was when I was at PAX Unplugged this past year, Bonnie and the Wizard Washburn and I went over to PAX, and I'm walking through the booths on the convention floor, and I'm walking by a table, and I literally see a box wrapped that says Top Secret. And I go, wait, what? So I had to get it. And I had given it to Chris at Christmas time. And then I was like, and you're running it for my birthday game. Because we had played Top Secret originally, the original Top Secret back in the 80s. This is a very different system, though. So, Chris, go into some of that, being a person who remembers the original Top Secret, and then kind of how it's changed, good and bad, here in the new edition.
I mean, I'd love to say that I remember how Top Secret was. I remember the box. I remember being thrilled about it, espionage. I remember it being very similar. The one thing with this one, and Tony kind of touched on it there, it's like a completely different system. It's like a die stepping system. So everybody has it. You have a dice for each of your attributes. You have a dice for these other skills that are the skills related to spying, like, or espionage, like tradecraft. And then you have other specialized skills, like, you know, you guys had marksmanship or something like that. And then on top of that, you can have like an asset where you have like, you know, with a gun, you get a certain asset die. If you're trying to do surveillance and you have something else, you would get an asset die. And you sort of stack these against either a lucky 13, which is their standard for success that slowly rises, or their opposed rolls. But it's very cool. It's very nostalgic, but to Tony's point too, it's very dangerous. So it was, I think the way that we played it was the way that it's probably I don't want to say meant to be played, but where it's light on the combat and heavy on the, you know, the espionage, spying, breaking in places, checking out stuff, getting information, rather than like busting out guns, because yeah, like those guns just like you guys saw, like it was pretty deadly in there. But a very exciting game, and it was a lot of fun to run it because it's a different kind of vibe. It wasn't like D&D. I didn't know where to put the roles, which was a bit of a challenge, and I think with time it could be there, because it's something like that. It's a little bit of a different system. It's not just the D20 every time, which I thought was, I ended up sometimes, obviously, because it was my first time, but I would smooth out the rolls a little bit because I wanted to make it easier, because I don't want to have to give you a different dice combination every time. Oh, that's your D6 plus your D8 and a D12 and a D10, and then so each time, so you'd want it to have a bit more of a flow. So I think it's a really good system, but it's like, there's a like a, it's a little bit crunchy at times, but once we got into the flow of it, it was a lot of fun. So.
Yeah, the original Top Secret was a percentile system of some you know, utilizing skills
Star
and stuff. So Tony was correct in like that. It's very similar in a way to Call of Cthulhu. I think Cthulhu is a bit streamlined compared to old Top Secret, because Top Secret was TSR, like the original TSR. So it was an incredibly clunky system, because that's just what they did, right? They just loved to write. Gary loved to write stuff, you know. But what was cool here is, and we've kind of touched on it, so it was a dice pool system. Which was cool, but it was utilizing every single die aside from the D20. I don't think we actually utilized the D20 at all in
there's certain random rolls.
But you have, your different attributes will have a D4 or a D10 or a D12 or a D6 or D8, whatever. And you're constantly stacking those dice together with another die, or you're rolling two of those die and then plus a... You know, the interesting thing they did was you would get your die for your attribute. You would get your die for like your whatever that like sig int and things like that were.
Tradecraft.
Yeah. And then Chris, as the administrator, would then say, okay, add a D4, a D6, a D8, a D10. Depending on, in essence, your DC was adjusted by that die. You would roll all of those. You have to hit either, like he said, lucky 13, if it's a ability check, as it were, or if it's an opposed roll, you had to beat their opposed roll. But what was fun is very similar to a lot of systems, including the Star Wars West End game system, just drop that again, is you had exploding die as well. So if you rolled a D10 and you hit a 10, you roll it again, and you keep Matt on his one, the driver of our crew, who was named Automobile. It was terrible. But he straight up rolled like three tens in a row. So he had like a 59 for his skill check. But it was cool in that way, because it did give this sense of like you had the ability to be the secret agent man. But yes, a gun will kill you, like surprisingly, because you're shocking. A human. But we had two people when we had to infiltrate the ship, and we're going to go into like what the adventure was and how Chris kind of put together the intro adventure that they give you in New World Order. But when we infiltrated the ship, two of our characters dropped, and that was just from two gunshots, bum, bum, and they were down. They were bleeding out. So yeah, it is not, it's just like James Bond, you know, if he gets shot, if somebody's not patching him up, he's going, you know?
Now that's what we're here for. That adds a degree of realism. We're not in a situation where each of us has 60 hit points and we walk into a bar and just guns blasting everywhere. And I've been shot three times and I'm like, that's inconvenient.
Yeah, it really changes how we approach what's in front of us, right?
So you're outnumbered. You're trying not to be seen. You have to lean into this kind of vibe. It's not going to be, not to say that you're not in a position where you couldn't crack skulls or use intimidation or any of those kind of angles, but it is entirely different. So Chris gave us different classes. I ended up with the criminal class. I opted to play number one as Robert Wagner from Austin Powers. That was my thing. I had an eye patch. And the, yeah, my character apparently survived, you know, the movie. And then this agency picked me up, and I started out as the oldest rookie in the spy game. But the important thing is you could be classes, and we each were good at something else. Like, I was a criminal, Dave was ex-military, and that fosters a real team environment where everybody's got something where they can do that we need them to draw on to further the story. Real kind of like classic RPG D&D crunchy mechanics there.
So Chris, set us up here. Like, you know, you were the one that had to kind of crack open the box and learn a new system and run an intro adventure for a big group of people. Like, what was the process here?
Well, I mean, in the book itself, like, you start to read a little bit, and one of the things they say is like, generate a character and go play, and then as you encounter things, like, go back to the rule book. But there were points where I was like, you know, that's going to be tough, but a table like six people, they're going to be like, hold on a second, let me go. You know, I still had to go back a couple times to the rule book. What I did was I pivoted to the adventure module, the White Queen. I don't want to give too much away if other people want to run it, but I would say it's a really nicely developed introductory adventure. The one thing it doesn't do as well as like some of the newer D&D adventures is it doesn't really lay out exactly what you need to do for everything and give you the spots exactly where have them roll here. There's a couple spots where they give you some rolls, but it doesn't lay you out there. Just I started to use that. And as I would outline stuff that we did, I would put the role in there and I'd go and look up how combat worked, or I'd go and look up how surveillance worked. And then I'd put that in my outline so that I would continue to read it, and that I'd also have it there at the table with me so I could look down. And if we needed to make a, you know, surveillance role, I could be like, okay, that's intellect plus SIGINT plus any specialized skill. I have my like outline right next to me now. So I had to look down right now to see that. But so there's some of that. It's just, I would say, you know, it is pretty challenging as a DM because it's kind of like stacking things and all that other stuff. It's a little bit more than saying, all right, give me a perception check. And like, usually you just, all right, I roll a D20. Now it's like, I roll three dice, or then possibly I could roll four dice if I have this thing. So there's a little bit of that.
Well, I think that's actually a really good point. I want to kind of delve into that because we've had this experience before. So we're all experienced DMs. We have run many, 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 many games. We've run entire campaigns. We have run other systems, and some systems we are much more familiar with than other ones. But that is a good point, Chris, in the sense that like the newer D&D modules, like we talk about, like with the starter set and things like that, they've gotten very good at saying, okay, this is how you would kind of run an adventure. They give you some pointers in the module itself, in the adventure. Like I use the idea of the Dragons of Stormwreck Isle, which is the newest starter set mod. I thought it was great for people who are new to D&D. So we say things like you were just saying, well, yeah, roll me a perception check and it's a D20 plus this. But to somebody who doesn't know D&D, that's a lot. Like, well, when do I ask for that? Like, we know that now. But even as experienced game masters and DMs, going to a new system, it really can help to have some of those like, all right, give me something, give me an example of play or something that I can work off of. I had the same problem when I ran Matt's birthday game when we did the Avatar, the Last Airbender role-playing game, the Magpie Games one, is it didn't really give me a lot of sense of this is when you're calling for a role. And I was not familiar at that time with the Powered by the Apocalypse system. So yeah, I think with intro modules, it's very helpful to give some guideposts with it, right?
No, that's solid. And what I really liked about how Chris ran that was the classic, you know, when you're teaching someone how to play in this world and how this world works is it's where I, you know, you're not as focused on mechanically as the player how to do it. You ask, you know, the GM, the DM, they, you know, how do I, okay, so I'm going to do this. What do I need to do? And then from that, after a couple times, you can kind of deduce like, all right, well, I have these three different skills. So my character, the criminal, was good at, you know, BSing. I could really like, you know, sell you a freaking used car.
Your swab score was ludicrous, dude.
It was elite. It'd be considered elite. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I could have had a real future in politics. So that worked out really fantastically in that respect.
Yeah, you were faced from the A-team, dude. Right? Like, I mean, with just straight up. Yeah.
I mean, with an eye patch. Also, with But the classes also felt like fit the vibe of the game very nicely as well, because, you know, it's not, we're going to go get those guys and beat them up. It makes you think and look at the problems entirely different. It's about trying to find people, trying to get people to cooperate, trying to get a location. It was really refreshing. It was like a real nice twist on an RPG. We're going to explore something that's not like, I'm going to a dungeon and I'm going to kill a bunch of creatures and haul out the loot.
Chris, go a little bit more into like, so like the way you kind of broke open the thing, and you're getting a sense of like the system, and okay, it's starting to make a little sense. But from my perspective, it felt like the adventure they gave you, the White Queen, was actually really robust. Like, it felt very much like a Bond film.
Well, it was a good plot.
The way they set it up, right?
Like, we kind of talk about that like a good hook, right? And I think that's what it does well, is that it's a cool hook. You have to recover Dr. Belyakov, right? The Russian Bioware guy who's been kidnapped or whatever. And then you go on the adventure. But it's like, it's a good, like to your point, it has good hooks, and it had good spots for me to, I generated a couple images, right? So like when they're in, you're in the office with Dame Edith Weathersby, right?
And she, oh, no,
the thing goes down and stuff like that.
I didn't know when I was going to talk about it, but like, that, like this game played to your new setup perfectly. So for everyone, for Chris, the way Chris has been running the Lord of the Rings game, is he has an extra monitor that he drops in front of his monitor, facing out towards us, and he's got a PowerPoint. He loads up some images. He can pop it on. Here's Serdan the Shipwright. Here's Bilbo Baggins, right? But dude, that setup straight up played into the whole like M thing, where like you're like, you know, our intel has shown that the White Queen, and like you were throwing up like the surveillance stuff, and I was like, this is like a perfect, like it feels like you're in Icon's headquarters, you know, getting your mission.
No, it's very much like that. Like, I think it's very powerful, but I think it was kind of like what we're talking about. These ones too, I think they lead towards a lot more role playing. Like, there's a lot more in there than there is combat. Combat is super dangerous. There are things that you can do, but there are large spaces in it, so you would kind of go, like, it's like you guys went to Latvia there, and then you're kind of there, what do you want to do, right? And you start to have to, like, it's and that started to get challenging as you guys started to go spy stuff. People want to do like crazy things, and so you start to be like, I want to do this, or I want to, like, you know, when she wanted to climb up through the
anchor, the hawse hole,
and like we had the whole like. And you're like thinking like, okay, so how do I roll this? What would this be like the thing there? It got a little challenging, but it was a lot of fun. Like, and I think that it's playing in that. Like, I think the module does a good job of that, of setting up a series of scenes that are very similar to what you might have seen in previous spy movies, like the scene in Europe there, a chase down the street. Right, the gunmen, like stuff like that. The Russian Bioware guy who's been, extradited, and like he's been kidnapped and stuff like that. So I thought it did a really good job of that. It was a lot of fun. Just, it's definitely challenging as you go to have to keep on trying to come up with things. When people come up with this wild thing, you're like, I'm not quite sure how to roll that. But even with D&D, it took me time to start to get to a feeling of being able to understand that. But a very, very fun system, and very fun if you're into that level of role play about it, because a lot of it is going to be, you're going to have to go talk to people, you're going to have to do things, you're going to have to be, it's, there's going to be roles in there, but there's a, it's a, it's espionage, right? Like, I think they play it good that way, is that it's very much like sort of like counter espionage, like Bond, versus something like where you're actually breaking in and doing all kinds of crazy damage. You're going in, you're like infiltrating things, so it's much more soft skills and stuff like that.
I think it's a great example we talk about a lot of times of, you know, the system plays well to certain things, right? So if, like you were saying, if you want to do something that's espionage, well, then right off the bat, you're not thinking I'm going in there guns blazing and I'm doing fisticuffs. I mean, you know, that will happen at times because it happens in any Bond film or whatever, right? But like we always joke, especially Tony and I, with our the Call of Cthulhu stuff, and it's like the meme where the D&D player playing Call of Cthulhu the first time, and it's just a dude in like a rucksack, and he has like 47 machine guns, and he's strapped with like 2 6-shooters on his sides, and he has a bazooka on his shoulder, because like you come at it with this idea, because in D&D, like. Good or bad, whatever, and we could get into this in another time, but like there is not the same level of danger, and it is kind of a combat-y system because you want to go fight monsters in dungeons, so you go do that, right? And you probably can survive if you're not, you know, completely inept at it. But Call of Cthulhu and Top Secret and stuff like this, if you get involved in a gunfight, you're probably going to die. So, like, it changes the way you approach it. But in Top Secret, as opposed to Call of Cthulhu, like, I can't fight the Shaga. Like, it's going to break my brain, right? So, like, in Top Secret...
You can shoot the sheriff, but not the Shaga.
Right, like, you feel like, oh, I could actually do this. And for me, I was... when we had to go get the... We had to go talk to the one asset at Cafe Kafka in Latvia. And right off the bat, you could see the change in how we were approaching it, because we're an espionage team. We're not a D&D party. And what does a D&D party do? They all run into the one room, and they all go into the king's chamber, and they go, okay, here we are. In this one, you don't just roll up like 6 people like, hey, we're just rolling by the way, the time in Paris, you know? So we were like, okay, I'm going to go up to the table. I'm going to sit at a table across the street. Tony's character was up on the roof doing some surveillance. Like, we immediately approached it in a way that was that the system was for. Does this make sense, what I'm saying here?
Yeah, no, I think it lends itself to that. You know, it's that, plus you're a team of 6 people. Like, they're sending 6 people in to surveil and meet with this guy. Like, he's going to be kind of scared. But, I mean, I think it engenders that, is that it makes you want it like heist movies and stuff like that. People want to have, there was times where I had to kind of rein in the complicated plans. Like, you guys would start to get on a tear and stuff like that. Some of it really ended up in cool stuff, but it's like, and you start to, right. Everything you want it to be that crazy, like Mission Impossible, where these 5 things happen, like you perfectly line it up and everything, like, you know, and stuff. So, but it does engender that kind of fun, where you're constantly trying to think about how do we deploy the team, right? Like, different ways to accomplish the particular mission at hand. So,
no, it's really, in some respects, you say, like, well, it's role play heavy. But I have to tell you, the role play in the same, you know, token felt light. And it's because it moved the story. All the role play that we were doing was very direct to, we're moving some aspect of this forward. It wasn't like, I'm in town. What kind of shops are there? Oh, there's a Burlington coat factory? Lovely. You know, can I find something that looks good for me in the fall? How is it +3? It's none of that nonsense. This is much more direct. It's affecting what's going on, and the role play has consequences, so everybody's into it. So you can roll up to the contact and completely botch your lines or fail a persuasion check, so to speak, and then, you know, everybody has to react. And as, like, you know, the one scene where Bonnie was talking to the contact, I'm up on a building watching this whole thing, and I see other agents rolling in with guns on a bike. Well, you know, everything changed on a dime. So in that respect, it was really engaging.
And I think, Tony, like, with the role playing, right, it was like we were playing the role. So, like, right off the bat, I kept trying to set it up like, okay, we're splitting the party constantly. Like, okay, you go do this. And we're like, oh, geez, what do you do? But in this type of game, in this type of world, that's what you would do. So I think in that way, like, I think we really – we went towards playing the actual role, not necessarily doing a lot of talking in character or whatever, but really playing the role the way that type of, you know, agent for Icon would be.
It will challenge you a little bit. It's totally fun. I'll recommend it at the end, but it will challenge you, is that it's naturally going to split the party. You're in D&D, you're accustomed. Anytime anybody splits off the party, you're like, all right, dude, Like, good luck. Like, we've been told you 1,000 times not to do it, you know? But in this one, it's going to happen. It's necessary, right? Like, you're literally not all four going to be just, like, joined at the hip, or all six of you joined at the hip to do all these activities. So it's cool for trying to, and I'm starting to get an idea of, like, the amount of time that you spend on one person versus the next person, because you still have to move it around the table. Like, there was a period where you guys went to the, one group went to the airport to get, to intercept a helicopter, and the other group went, I believe, I don't forget where the other group went, but you guys had split up, and so we have to start.
We were setting ourselves up because we had decided to approach
with Andrus or whatever like that.
We were approaching, we were going to infiltrate the boat in two ways. Well, like, we were going to infiltrate, like, sneak in, but then the other team was going to try to become, like, to fake themselves and disguise themselves as the other buyers, whether or not the people that were doing the selling knew that they were the buyers or not. We didn't know, but we had split up in that way, which I thought was awesome in terms of really playing into the way this would set up. But then also the way you ran it, I felt like you kind of, you know, it was almost scene to scene. Okay, now this team.
You have to think about it a little bit like the movies you've seen, like, how long do I spend in this particular scene before I move to the next thing? And also just look over at the other thing. Like, at a certain point, people will be engaged and it's fun that the other team is doing something. At a certain point, you kind of have to move the action back. You let a couple things happen and move it back and forth, but it was fun. I think if it started to get to be like three or four separate people doing separate things and you have to keep on breaking the description. Okay, now you're here and you're doing this, would start to get a little bit confusing, but it's very fun and it's very challenging in that way. Like car chases. Like, when was the last time we had a car chase? This was between like a milk truck and a motorcycle, but for real, like,
dude, that vehicle was a milk truck.
And you guys still took him out. Like, you went down a side street. Matt's character was quite a driver. But it was
better off Otto.
No, yeah, very fun, very different things. Like, it's like, I don't know, right? It's like a change of pace. It's a very nice change of pace compared to D&D or something like that. So,
well, and as we see every time we do one of these, there's several things where we go, oh, that really is a great thing. That's a great mechanic. That's a great way of running the table. That's a great, whatever it might be. And then there's like, oh, I don't really like the way that went. That was a little clunky. I wouldn't want to use that. But these are the types of things that when you play these other systems, even if you love playing D&D or whatever you're playing, Call of Cthulhu or whatever, Blades in the Dark or Daggerheart, whatever, that it gives you a lot of these skills are completely usable in whatever system you're playing, and you don't know about them until you run a different system, run a different game, and just see what else is out there.
So here's one for you, Chris. Now that you've had the chance to see how this plays out with your players in more recent times, and after the game's over, we all laughed about it, it was great, but would you have done anything differently in your style of play or how you presented that adventure?
I probably would have reviewed the rule book a little bit more, but I don't think that it could have totally prepared me for all the things. So in some cases I would wing the things there. Maybe tiny bits here or there with the things, but no, I really enjoyed the way that it all went. If anything, I pre-generated the characters ahead of time because I knew that it was not going to be. I left enough so that you could pick a little bit of stuff, like there was some equipment or something. But there's not enough time at the beginning. But
one of the best ways to run a new game. I will say it again and again.
Yeah, yep. But then and like between that and then presenting it all, like, it would make for a very fun campaign. And obviously, I'd give you guys a chance to generate characters from the ground up, but there's a lot of meat there for it. It's just it's more complex than D&D is going to be, but it's designed that way. It's a maddeningly beautiful system, right? With the stacking of dies and the decision dies and stuff like that. It's just the kind of thing that it's not going to be as user friendly as 5e, so it's going to require a little bit of investment. But I think the style of it and everything makes it really fun.
I don't know. I still say though, I think a lot of that is because we are so so familiarized with
we are D20
with D&D, you know what I mean? Like, it's so in us, like, we don't even question some of the stuff that people would go like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, we don't even question it, you know?
Sort of like a regular engine versus a Rube Goldberg machine. The Rube Goldberg machine is beautiful, right, in its own right there, but the engine just runs perfectly and simple, so it's
So for a spy thriller, I felt like the story was overly complex. It had a degree of complexity. So I got to tell you that there are some people who are probably listening to this about...
You did or didn't think it was overly complex.
But I could see that some people would be like, you know, it honestly, like a lot of stories in the games, you know, and this is kind of like a behind the secret, you know, behind the screens kind of opinion. You only need to have so much functioning knowledge of it, you know, to move around and do things and be with it and participate. I mean, you can know all of it and really like play that Grandmaster Chess or, you know, all right, we have to go here. We have to talk to these people. All right, and then let's see what happens. And you kind of start picking up and catching up as the game unfolds itself. And in those respects, it gave us kind of a framework to move around and cut our teeth in the system. It was good.
Yeah, Tony, I'll say that with that, like, I didn't think it was overly complex either. I thought it was pretty straightforward, actually. I mean, it was a pretty, like, you know, you got, okay, this is the problem. This guy's going to really, you know, he's developed a bioweapon and the bad guys want it. You got to get him back, you know. It's not the bad guys, which I will say just as a little side note, it was awesome that the fates just kind of worked out that I was able to, like, throw the villain from the helicopter, Tom Cruise style. Like, and it was my birthday game. Like, I don't think it was like it just happened that way, you know, because anyone could have ran to the copter. But
no, I was bleeding out. I could not.
Well, yeah, you were one of the ones that got dropped. It wasn't overly complex, but this also, so obviously you're agents for Icon. Just like, you know, Bond is in Her Majesty's Secret Service and the Mission Impossible team, right? So you have the chain of command and you have your hierarchy. And we had our Dame Judi Dench, M, that brings us in and says, here is your mission. And that is an excellent way. Like, we talk about it all the time, like the hook and all this. Like, the hook is already in for you if your setup is that people give you orders, right? So, like, it's an excellent way to focus the attention. And this isn't a bad thing, but to focus the attention on the adventure. Here is the adventure. I need you to go complete this. Now, how that's going to happen, well, now we got to figure it out. Like, I can give you your resources. I can give you some intel. But now you have to go out and do it. And I thought that that was great because it's like having a patron. And I'm thinking like with Lord of the Rings, Chris, like the Middle Earth campaign, we have patrons as part of kind of the system. And they're in essence like, hey, I need help with X or I need you to go out and do this. And it's a great way to get the adventure going. And this is literally baked into it because you're agents in an organization.
No, I wanted to actually get back to Tony's thing. Like, there are elements to this introductory adventure that are a little bit, there's a bit of a double switch that happens or that's supposed to happen. There's some nuance to the delivering of the thing. So it's like, I think with anything else, like, it's like you have to make sure you try to focus the main, like, you need to do this or you need to do that, because as it went, it was as it should be with a spy thing, but it's not like it gets crystallized. Like, very often a fantasy thing, like a freaking dragon explodes in the sky and that's where I need to go. This one was a bit more, there's a bit more nuance to deliver the stuff to finally get you to like the ship at the end and all that stuff. Like, it's, I have to like deliver it, but I don't want to, I can't, you know, it's a spy thing, so guys aren't just going to be like, bang, like, this is what it is. It has to be a little bit, you know, thing. So it
subterfuge.
Makes for, yeah. Yeah. It makes for, it's sometimes it's difficult to truly get the stuff across, but there were certain things where I made sure that I had it in my notes to fire those in, stuff like the passphrase and stuff like that, because I was like, this is going to be like, this is the kind of thing that if you don't hear it a couple times, you're not going to remember once the game starts. So it was, but you know, but yeah, it's definitely, you have to, like, you know, nurse your players along a little bit. There's going to be a little bit of role play and everything like that, because it's more complex situations where you're not delivering the information in the same way.
All right. So I think it's about that time for some final thoughts on our birthday, my birthday game in Top Secret, the World of Espionage. What did we think? What did we like, not like?
So it is an opportunity to take a different approach in a different place. Modern times. I mean, we're usually in the medieval times, or I'm super far in the future, but now here we are actually, God forbid, you know, here in the 21st century, and you're working in a team, you have a new system, new classes. The learning curve was not that bad, honestly. You're using all the same dice you normally would be using if the person like Chris ran it, where you can tell you what you're trying to do, and he can tell you how it's going to play out, what you need to roll. It's pretty smooth. Honestly, and you are very heroic, despite the fact you're also squishy. You went wrong, like really, like, you know, Dave was jumping for that helicopter. Dave could have broke his neck. And I gotta tell you, the weight
I had to jump like 3 times to try to get on the goddamn copter, dude. It was the most unclimactic Tom Cruise Mission Impossible scene ever.
You did get the dropper after you fell 3 times, though. So there was that. So.
Persistence. Well, I was like still squirting blood in, you know, various directions. But yeah, so it's like the stakes are high. It's like you're doing a heist and you're first level. I mean, really just consider it like that. But you're not really first level people. You're the secret agents. You're well trained. All the role play was light. It moved the plot. I mean, there was a lot of things I did like about it. I would play it again. That's my rating.
I love the atmosphere that it creates, right? Like it's like the, you know, I'm a big fan of Bond films and all the Mission Impossible and stuff like that. So you get that kind of vibe with it. I think it's really good role playing because of that, right? That kind of atmosphere leads to role playing. So I think it's a very fun game as far as getting the table involved and talking and everything like that. I think it's a really good job for the team oriented kind of vibe, is that you're going to get a lot of people coming up with heists and a different ways to do things. Like I said, we would spend like 15 minutes each time there was a thing coming up with a plan and going back and forth amongst people before they decided. And then you, like, a lot of times you're going to get split ups and stuff. There's a collaborative element where even in that first scene where we're all basically in the same area, you're still sort of split up and acting independently. And then later on, we split up and we were having separate side by side missions to complete, you know, objectives. So I think that it's really awesome for that. You know, the introductory module is a great hook. I think that's a big lift. Like when I read the introductory module, I was like, oh, I'm excited. Like, oh, we got to, like, it made me think of Mission Impossible 2 with Chimera. Like, and I was like, all right, we're going to run this. This is awesome. The one thing I didn't like, I would say it's not like I don't like them, but the rules. I think they are very complex. It's like, it's like the grenade bounce charts kind of stuff. Like there's a level of crunchiness to it, but there's also a good level of promise. So it's not that I think for an introductory adventure, it can be difficult because there is a lot of variations of that. Like I said, I ended up smoothing a little bit, I think, with time and with a table that's interested in it. And it is a really fun game. So like, it's not like I'm not interested in learning it. I think it could be really fun, but they are much more complex than a lot of the other systems. But in their complexity, there is a really excellent thing with the decision dies and the asset dies where I can see it in my head. It was just difficult to bring it to the table as an introductory thing. But as something that is moving forward, I think it could be really awesome. Like I really enjoyed it. And even my not like is a very temporary not like until we play it again, you know, and I get another shot at it.
Well, we say it all the time. I think it is a big lift anytime you have to run a game and bring the game to the table and in essence teach the game at the table while you're still learning. That is it. It's just what it is. It's hard. It's one thing to introduce new players to a game you know, but to also be kind of learning the game and running it and teaching people, that's a lot. And I thought you did really great. I know you pulled away some of the rules, but I feel like that was good. Like, you change, like, in the same way that you could have exploding dice, you could also have dice that go the other way, blowback. So you start to get like, oh, things start to get harder, or the tension meter that you had out, like that could start to make things become harder as you go along. And those are all really awesome little fine-tuned things, but not in a game where we're still trying to, okay, which ones do I roll? You know, I have to roll my reflex and this one and this one. We're still just getting that sense. So I thought that you streamlined it in a great way. I thought, I mean, I don't know what the character creation method is or the process, but tell you the truth, being able to pick out the background, so criminal or ex-military or actor or driver, whatever, and then you provided the pre-gen and we named them and whatever, I didn't feel at all like it wasn't my character. Like, I feel like this system, because there's not a ton of stuff that you have to have. You have four attributes. You have some skills. Like, you kind of, that's my character. And then I can build it from there. So I thought using the pre-gens was one great, because I love using pre-gens for something like this, because I don't want to spend an hour or more making characters when we have 4 hours to play. But then also, like, I thought the pre-gens were fine. Like, I thought that they filled the role that we thought we were coming into, whether it was military or dry, you know, auto or architect somehow. The Scott's character, who he actually is an architect by trade, but then he's actually also playing an architect who is now a secret agent. It was a weird thing. But this was a big old whiff of nostalgia. Because Top Secret was like super awesome. It was one of the ones that fell into all the other stuff when we talk about the early days of gaming, where we didn't play it a lot, but it was a lot of lonely fun. So it was a lot of reading through the books and looking at all the pictures and making a character and maybe playing a little bit of a game here or there, you know, but looking at the different maps and the tokens that would come with it. So there's just all of that just like that stew of nostalgia that was just phenomenal. And like you guys, I would totally break this out and run like, you know, a longer form campaign and see how character advancement happens, different missions, you start to get known, you know, you go from Daniel Craig in Casino Royale to, you know, Die Another Day or whatever, you know, that would be pretty awesome. Anyway, that's going to be it for me though. Chris, thank you again for running it. It was phenomenal. I highly recommend anyone who wants to play in a spy thriller or espionage. I think this system handles it beautifully. You know, it's specifically set for that, and I think it really does that well. Anyway, this obviously is not a listener question. This was not even a question. This was us just reviewing the latest game that we did with a brand new system, one of our legendary birthday games. You know, feel free to give us a call. Maybe we'll come to your house and run you a birthday game. Please don't call us for that. I know that's a lot. I don't know what the pricing structure
is. I mean, if you're in the tri-state area, I mean, we could discuss.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I'm not saying yay or nay. I'm just saying, you know, let's see if anybody actually reaches out. That'd be weird. But this was not a listener question. This was our own thing. But we are DMs with problems. We love to help DMs with problems. So if you have any problems, issues, questions, something that's happening at your table that's weird or you're having trouble with, or you just want to talk about or listen to us talk about, reach out to us. You can reach us on our website at 3wisedms.com and put it in the What's Your Problem field. You can reach us at our email at 3wisedms@gmail.com or Facebook and Instagram. We're very active on those sites. If you're not already there, head back and check out some of our awesome photos when we dressed up as a bunch of spy agents from Icon. It was pretty awesome. Also, like, if you're playing Top Secret too, man, like, you're going to need all the dice. Like, you need the full gamut, which I'm still...
Double sets.
Yeah, I like the different die, because it gives like some fun to it, but I wonder if it's also a little overly complicated with it. But you need all the dice, so go get some dice at our affiliate link at fanrolldice.com/REF/2871. Put in the code 3WISEDMS10, the number 3WISEDMS, the number 10. You'll get 10% off your order, but then you have to immediately get off the site because it will self-destruct in 35 seconds. But that's it. That's going to be up for us this week. thanks again for stopping by and listening to us jaw about this stuff. But yeah, go out and check out Top Secret. It's back and it's awesome, and you're going to have a lot of fun. But as we do each episode, we are going to let our dear old erstwhile leader take us out.
And thank you all at home for listening to another episode of Three Wise DMs. If you like what you heard, please give us the 5-star rating in your podcast platform. And if you want to hear us answer one of your questions, this is something that we brought to the table, but we often answer listener questions. So if you want to hear us answer one of your questions, please send it in. We're always looking for new material for the next podcast. We love helping you solve the problems you have. This is a podcast for Dungeon Masters with problems. That's what we're really here to do. And that's it for this week. We'll see you next time. Three Wise DMs.